What's going on, everyone? It's Bluff here, and you know what's more American than America's 250th birthday? Supporting American-owned companies like SpinQuest, America's number one social casino with over 1,000 games like Live Dealer Blackjack and Craps. They're offering new users a $30 coin package for just $10. Go to SpinQuest.com and sign up today.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Third hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a great day here on this Monday afternoon. 2 hours in the books, two to go. Every Monday at this time, we head east. We check in with Vince Ferrar at WNML, the sports animal there in Knoxville. Also, you can follow him on Twitter, at Vince Sports. Free and easy to do. He's a good follow. Vince, how you doing?
Good, guys. How you doing?
Good. Good. How are you?
Yeah, good. Enjoy the weekend. I mean, we're just so fortunate right now to have four NBA playoff games in a day, to have the Stanley Cup playoffs with, I think, just four awesome matchups, and to have that to be able to watch the other four, it's a real...
We're going to have to put Vince on hold. Vince, we got a bad connection with you, man. Bad celery. Let's put him on hold. See if we can get a better signal.
Yeah, some technical difficulties to start things off, but that's okay. We can power through.
We can power through. That's what we do on this show. We power through. By the way, Scott Burnside coming up at 1 o'clock. We'll talk some hockey with him. And while we await, just wanted to let everybody know that rocknashville.com is your community resource page. Check it out for information around town, including Nashville's good-to-go initiatives, CDC updates, ways to help the Middle Tennessee community. That's rocknashville.com. Let's see if we've got Vince Ferrara back on the line
Not
with
yet.
Us. You know what? What else is cool that we have never done before is Vince Ferrara every Monday at noon is brought to you by TechCore. How about that? Huh?
How about that? How about
big apples? Vince with a sponsor. Yeah, baby.
I like it.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's bring him back in. Vince Ferrara, brought to you every Monday by TechCore. I don't know if you heard that or not. Vince, how you doing? Let's
I'm
try
good,
this again.
Guys. Got you guys hear me better now.
Yeah. Yeah, you're now sponsored, man. That's how big time you are.
Nice. Huh? Nice. I appreciate that very much.
There's a movement for freeing Cade Mays. What's the latest on that front?
Well, obviously, a lot of support from coaches and even, fans, obviously. But even Jeremy Pruitt, unsolicited, when we talked to him last, when we talked to the media on Friday, he was asked, maybe just a general on-the-field type of Cade Mays question. And then he went on to speak about his disappointment about Cade Mays and how, he supports, reiterated that he supports a, one transfer rule, which I think was going to get passed, but, they had to table it because of the pandemic. And he was again expressing that, he even brought up the fact that there was, a lawsuit there with his parents and how what an awkward situation it was. He was kind of making his case for it. And it was weird. Originally it was said that it didn't have anything to do with the lawsuit. Then they said that they were going to take a different approach the second time. So it was his attorney, said that they were going to take a different approach this time with the appeal in talking about the environment there at Georgia. So it's just really confusing, convoluted, and you're just, hearing different sides of things. It seemed like the lawsuit could have been positioned for potentially to say, hey, you know, we'll transfer, you know, you clear this transfer and we'll drop the lawsuit. At least that was sort of the public perception when there was that lawsuit with his, you know, with his parents and towards Georgia. But apparently that, you know, that approach didn't work. So it's just kind of a mess. They're still in the appeal process. It may, in the end, he may end up still getting eligible. But it was just interesting to see Jeremy Pruitt come out for a second time to speak about his disappointment in the situation. And he reiterated what a lot of us are thinking, you know, there's really, you know, for the NCAA or anyone to deny a kid an opportunity to play during a pandemic just didn't make, you know, a whole lot of sense and is disappointing. And I think a lot of people agree with that.
Yeah, it's just weird for the NCAA not to make sense. I know that's kind of the strange part about all this.
one little thing on that, just a little theory. I'm not a conspiracy theory guy. But some of the things that the NCAA has done, and even the eligibility thing was a little bit a part of it, it seems like they maybe aren't really excited about moving forward with the football season for whatever reason. Seems like they wouldn't mind if it was just all pushed back to spring, just little things that you can read between the lines. And I don't know, maybe this is another way, these individual cases are another way to say, hey, you don't want to play in the fall, so we're just gonna look out for you and not grant you that waiver. Gabe Mays is the only one that they've denied, so I don't know if that's the case or not, but it's just something that crossed my mind. And anything is possible with the way the NCAA operates.
Austin Peay is going to play a football game this weekend, upcoming.
How about that?
You know, there's going to be football games that are going to start. So where are you right now today, because this has been kind of interesting to see week by week how we feel, right? So how do you feel today about right now the SEC still trying to forge ahead with 10 conference games? You feel like they're going to be able to pull it off? Do you feel any different today than this time last week?
I do. At least I'm really not thinking long-term or season completion, sort of thinking shorter term goals and getting the season started, seeing how it goes and hoping for the best. You know, you had the whole North Carolina thing. You know, I know Vandy had its pause. It's not like it has been widespread and everybody is shutting down. So I'm encouraged by that. And another thing that happened, it's funny because when Jeremy Pruitt talked about what they were doing with testing last Monday after the first practice, he said there were 23 positive tests total that they've had, and a lot of them were after the kids came back from 4th of July break. Stunning, right? That kids would maybe not make the best decisions during that break, and when they came back, they had more positive tests. And he said it was a learning experience for them. So I take that as, hey, some guys didn't make the right decisions. Now you see what can happen. Let's take this more seriously moving forward. And that's probably the case with a lot of places that had the positive test. So he said that they're testing now once a week, and they would test twice during the season. The way I looked at it, I don't think that's enough. I think you're asking for a wider spread. I am no expert, but I, knowing how frequently the pro sports do test and how they've been able to maintain for the most part success and isolate incidents, I know Major League Baseball's had some, but now they're over the top precautious about one positive test, whereas before I think they weren't. So they've kind of adjusted as they've gone, but for the most part the frequent testing helps you from spreading it out throughout. So I think the SEC, right after, maybe a day or two after Jeremy Pruitt said they're doing it once a week, they modified their protocols to twice a week testing throughout the league. I think that's a positive step. Not sure why they didn't just start there at the very least, but at least they made that adjustment. So, you know, because we're not hearing all of these, you know, massive shutdowns throughout the league and everyone pausing, sure, it's going to be on a different level once the season gets there, but I think you'll see more players be more on point in making good decisions once we get to the season as well. So I don't know if they're going to finish, but I am more optimistic right now than it was a week ago and definitely 2 weeks ago that we'll at least get rolling on it.
The odds makers do not think Vanderbilt and Arkansas are going to be very good. In fact, they've got them deemed the worst two teams in the conference, and it's really not even close.
Mm-hmm.
UT, I think we went over every over under on win totals by the odds makers last week on the show. I think UT off the top of my head was 5.5, guys, unless you can remember.
Yep.
Correct.
Okay, so do you agree with that? And where are you leaning towards, over or under 5.5 wins?
Well, I think it's accurate in its range. That's what I think a lot of us that aren't putting bias into it, that's the range that I hear a lot of people saying, 5 and 6 wins. I have them at 6 and 4 in the regular season right now. I was on a TV show, the Sports Source, on Sunday mornings I'm a part of in rotation, and I think everybody was 5 and 5 or worse. I guess one was on a caveat. But anyway, I was the one that was at 6 and 4 there, and that was the top end. But we did a Twitter poll, and 6 and 6 had the most, but 7 and 3 was far ahead of 5 and 5. So I think fans are expecting minimum 6 and 4, and then plenty of them. Remember last week when I was talking about how fans would view it, like the initial reaction, in case when I'm asking this, the initial reaction to the schedule coming out, and we at first got some people saying, oh man, this is a tough schedule, I don't know, you know, doom and gloom, 5 and 5, 4 and 6. Well, that stuff didn't last very long. I knew it wouldn't. Now we're getting the 7 and 3s and the 8 and 2s, and now you're starting to see people ramp up and get more excited. And then as you get closer, that's only going to enhance. So I have them at 6 and 4. I think largely they'll win the games they're supposed to and lose to some of those tougher teams, except for in that tough back-to-back duo of A&M and Auburn. I think they'll get one of those two games as it sits right now, and that's how you get to 6 and 4. Certainly there's some really, really difficult teams, 5 of the top 13. However, as you mentioned, Arkansas and Vanderbilt, those are two teams that might not win a game in the league this year. So there should be no reason whatsoever, if you're as good as you think you are, that you lose to those two teams. I don't care what your history is or Vandy keeping it tough for you. So the schedule is spread out. A number of teams have very difficult opponents before they play Tennessee. Alabama has Georgia the week before. Georgia, I believe, has Auburn. So a number of these teams, Missouri has Alabama. So a number of these teams have tough games before. It's spread out overall. Bye week doesn't do you a whole lot of good with Arkansas as the next game. But I think the schedule is very positive for Tennessee. And I said, even I haven't taken Cade Mays out of the equation yet either, because we'll see, maybe he will be eligible. And they have depth on the O-line too. So that's where I am. I have it 6 and 4 right now.
Talking to Vince Ferrara, and he is brought to you by TechCore here on 102.5 The Game. Vince, we had a spirited discussion on the show last week about what's the right amount of fans that you could potentially have, and then what would you have to do to make sure that if you let the fans in, that the behavior is right, you're doing it right, all of these things. And right as we were doing that, a couple of SEC schools announced that they would have a percentage of fans in the stands. Georgia and Auburn, I think, were the first two that we saw. Where is Tennessee on that?
Yeah, Tennessee was in line with that, Willie, when teams were coming out with that. And Phillips Fulmer was speaking at a function, I think, with the governor. And he said that they're probably headed towards a 25% capacity, which would put you in the 25,000 range for Neyland. Didn't necessarily offer specifics on how to execute that plan. I still think there's a lot for them to work out there. He also mentioned this, a key point, and we've kind of talked about it a little bit on the show before as well, how they looked at Bristol executing their race up there and with fans, and how there was not an outbreak of COVID tests, COVID positives after that. So they were able to execute it. I think that gave them some more confidence that they could have a plan with limited fans, a percentage of fans. You also talked about how with first season ticket holders, if they will have the option to opt out, which is something that's been consistent in college and in the NFL, that a lot of them are taking that approach, and it's smart. And if you do opt out, you don't lose your spot and your seat for a season ticket. So a lot of the things he mentioned have been really consistent with what we've seen other teams do. And he also dropped one note about the budget, and he said they're looking at losing $30 to $40 million this year, even with playing football, and that number could double if they don't play football. So, how they execute that, Will, it's your question. We'll see, but it'll take a lot of manpower and a lot of volunteers, I imagine.
So, hopefully, that's what you have in our state. A lot of volunteers, especially at Tennessee. Yeah.
No, unintended. That's right.
Yeah. So Vince, we talked to you last week about what we thought we were going to see, hope we were going to see with high school football. I read David Ubbin's piece on The Athletic on the first game that was played on the high school level on Thursday night in your part of the state. How did it go? What did you observe in the games on Friday night your way?
Well, I called the game on radio for the sports channel on AM 990 with Don Mahoney, my partner again this year. So we called Webb school at Austin East, and we're a lightning delay, so kind of thinned out the crowd some, but most of the fans were wearing masks, and they were similar to kind of what you saw in the Bristol race, where families would be little groups, and they'd be all together, and then there'd be multiple rows, and then you'd see another group of their family and their party together that way. Most people wearing masks. We had a booth to ourselves, which was nice. Coaches wearing masks. We went and talked to the coaches on the field. They were wearing masks. And so, you just haven't heard of outbreaks or anything like that. Both of the teams that we called their games said they had no positives or no impact from COVID leading up to the start of the season. I was watching the Thursday night game on TV, and they panned to the crowd. Now the weather was better. That, I think, thinned out the crowd on Friday night because we had some bad weather. But on Thursday, it was fine. And they panned to the crowd at Halls, and all excited, and they looked like it was normal. Man, they were all one on top of another. That was maybe the student section. But I thought there was some adjustments, but in some cases – also, they were, it was kind of same as normal, and each place had a different amount of percentage of fans that were wearing masks and separated. So I think it's going to be different everywhere you go, and probably that way in college athletics also.
Vince Ferrara is here with us, brought to you by TechCore. And Vince, I want to go back to the schedule for a second, because you bring up high school football. I can remember when I was in high school, and even after covering games, that coaches they would schedule opponents that they knew they had no chance. It was going to be a rough game, but it was games that they could learn from and to see what they have as a team and see how they respond. That's basically the entire schedule now. So, do you view the way that the SEC, the all SEC schedule for Tennessee is, that there could be some of that maybe, as Jeremy Pruitt tries to build this culture and add to it, that his team, the younger guys especially, can learn from such tough opponents?
I think so. I think the tough games are always valuable. Now, there's been some debates. I've heard some people say that South Carolina game for Tennessee is going to be a critical game that can really swing the season for them. And I don't know if I see it that way. One, they were drastically different after the first 2 weeks last year than they were later in the year. So teams evolve and they're different. So I'm not going to pin the season or a winning record on that first game. The other part of it is that I don't think any of these coaches, no matter what they say, that they feel good about their team, blah, blah, blah. I don't think any of these coaches truly know what they have until they see them. I mean, both of the coaches I talked to in doing high school games are like, I have no idea. I have no idea what we have, how the kids respond. You know, some of these kids have never played football. They couldn't scrimmage going in. So just you're really limited. So I think you're going to see teams change as the season goes on. And, yeah, those learning lessons, you're going to get a truer read on what you have by playing SEC opponents. If you were to play an FCS opponent that wasn't a very good FCS, you may get a false read. Okay, this kid's ready to go, and then they're not. So I think you find out quickly what you have. And then, obviously, I think this year more than ever, you're going to have to rely on your depth. So it's going to be a moving target from that standpoint all year.
We've talked a lot of football, but I know Rick Barnes did a Zoom as well. What all came from that?
Well, he thinks that there's going to be a college basketball season, and then they will start on time. He said that's what he thinks. He also said they cannot afford to not play the NCAA tournament for a second consecutive season. And he was speaking more towards many programs beyond the Power Fives that wouldn't be able to survive. He said he thinks that they will have an NCAA tournament in some form or fashion. And in order to do that, you have to have something of a regular season. He said there's been the bubble scenarios and other things that they have talked about, not for a whole season, but maybe for some of those tournaments that were either supposed to be overseas or in other places that maybe they could gather a group for a short period of time and get some of those games in there. But he said the key is, you know, we don't have to rush to decisions right now for basketball. Everyone, all these conferences canceling stuff. You know, let's wait to see how football does, and then how did they get better? How can we get better? And then we can adjust our plan. We don't have to jump to decisions right now. And I think that's the way a lot of us feel about, you know, the Big Ten and Pac-12's decision for football. You didn't necessarily have to make that decision. They decided to. That's up to them. But that's the approach. That was the big message he wanted to share, is that, hey, we got to get football done right first, but he thinks basketball will start on time. And one little roster thing, he did mention that he talked about almost everybody, and he was asked if one of the bigs could redshirt this year, and he said, yeah, it's possible. We won't decide until just before the first game, but they have so much depth on this roster. You could probably see a Corey Walker, who was the high four-star in the signing class, probably be the one that it would redshirt, because Barnes was talking about how before he does anything, he has to get into shape, and missing a lot of the workouts in the summer sort of set him back. But yeah, that was probably the most noteworthy thing from Barnes today.
He is building a stacked roster for the next several years, isn't he?
It's ridiculous. I mean, even Anasicki, the transfer, he was raving about him and his work ethic. I don't know if you guys saw it, but the Tennessee basketball Twitter account put out all these guys flexing, no shirts on. You look at E. Pons. I mean, you kidding me? I mean, the NFL would love to have anyone on their roster that looked like that guy. And obviously it's huge to have him back. The two five-stars they add to Josiah Jordan James, who did a lot in yoga, and now he's a lot more flexible. All those guys are in better shape. This is a really deep roster, and they have the hammer of competition. You want to play, you got to sell out in every practice. You have to pay attention, and that's what coaches love. That competition is going to make them better. And I love Barnes and his coaching ability to have so many more options to be able to throw different defenses at teams, to throw different lineups at teams. He can do pretty much anything he wants now at his disposal. And with the basketball minds on that staff, that's really exciting. It's going to be such a good team and a fun team to watch.
Yep, I'm not surprised. He thinks there's going to be a basketball season, and it's going to start on time because he is hoping for that big time. Vince, appreciate the visit as always. You have a great week.
All right, guys. Appreciate you. Thanks so much.
All right, you've been listening to Vince Ferrara. He joins us every Monday starting at noon. That's powered by TechCore, providing you top-of-the-line IT service and Turner Security Systems right here in Nashville. We'll come back. More of Darren, Donick, and Chase on the other side. ESPN 102.5, The Game.
Hey, everybody. Lady Luck here. And we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on SpinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just $10.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.